W250CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis. Legal jeopardy for the commonly used abortion drug mifepristone. A Texas judge ruling against its use despite 23 years of FDA approval.
The judge said that the FDA had escaped any legal liability on this and were too bold in its decision when it approved this drug 23 years ago. Now, of course, the FDA made their argument in court that this is a drug that's extremely safe. It's been on the market for 23 years. They haven't seen any safety signals. They say there's no reason to challenge it now. Of course, the judge, who does have a history of opposing abortion rights, sided with the conservative plaintiffs.
ABC's Ann Flaherty, a competing opinion in Washington State, held that the drug should stay accessible. An appeals court will now have to weigh in. Pope Francis said to deliver his Easter vigil mass tonight at St. Peter's Basilica, followed by his Easter message in St. Peter's Square on Sunday. Day three of the Masters at Augusta National underway this morning in the rain after round two was suspended due to severe thunderstorms and high winds on Friday. This is ABC News. The Justice Department has launched an investigation into the possible release of secret Pentagon documents that were posted on several social media sites and appear to detail U.S. and NATO aid to Ukraine.
A U.S. official saying the documents are no longer relevant to the battlefield, adding that they are of limited intelligence value and appear to have been altered from the original documents. For instance, the number of Russian fatalities was significantly reduced in the photo posted online. But the fact that this top secret material appeared on the internet so soon only deepens the security concern.
ABC's Mary Bruce. Authorities say the docs may have been used as part of a misinformation campaign. Victory for the Justice Department over January 6th prosecutions.
In a 2-1 decision, the appeals court ruled that a felony statute criminalizing obstruction of government proceedings can be used to prosecute members of the mob that stormed the Capitol on January 6th. The statute's language makes it a felony to alter, destroy, or mutilate a record. Ike Ajachi, ABC News.
This is ABC News.
This is so good.
Why are you eating so much popcorn?
Well, I'm making a difference for Wisconsin schools, and I was able to easily shop online.
I mean, it does look yummy.
OMG, you've got to try this cheddar jalapeno.
Mmm, it is good.
Oh, and I ordered a bunch of other gourmet flavors, chocolate delight, cookies and cream, and even dill pickle, delivered to my door. And I help Wisconsin schools in the process. Go to the Wisconsin Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop. That's civicmedia.us/shop. And order now. The shop closes April 10th.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, and I'll tell you what, it's more fun than tipping cows. And actually, you shouldn't really tip the cows, okay? They don't tip as easy as they think, and they might kick you in the... Never mind.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Spring is almost here, and that means the environment will get a few months off from damaging road salt. There's a bill in the Wisconsin legislature to certify people who apply road salt and encourage them to do it responsibly. Mike Moen reports.
The DNR would be tasked with establishing training for individual commercial applicators who would learn methods for spreading snow and ice melting products that protect water quality. Representative Elijah Benke is a lead sponsor on the assembly side and noted the impact of salt ending up in waterways is becoming hard to ignore.
Harmful effects have been noticed in our native aquatic organisms and other freshwater ecosystems.
To ease any concerns from the business community, the bill has language surrounding liability protections to shield applicators from lawsuits stemming from a slip and fall incident. Others who testified noted the plan can reduce salt from being spread around while still protecting public safety. The measure has bipartisan support as well as backing from environmental advocates. University of Wisconsin professor Hillary Dugan testified in support of the bill. Speaking on her own behalf, she noted efforts to curb salt use go beyond protecting habitat and waterways.
And this hurts recreational activities, it hurts property values. Thinking about if your private groundwater well gets salty, your property values reduced, you're left without drinkable water.
Dugan says state and local snowplow operators have made strides in being more efficient with their application of road salt or switching to less harmful products. She says incentivizing private contractors can accelerate progress. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection. Find our rate trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, April 8th, 2023, and this is our weekly review, our analysis together, and our discussion in community of the most important news stories in the areas of what? Of law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you once again for joining me on this Saturday morning in early April for a discussion of all of that and more. As always, we have an ambitious, but I believe achievable agenda, a good syllabus this morning, informative and inspiring, hopefully, also including you. As always, my wonderful producer Anya and I are taking your phone calls here at the studios of WAUK Radio, which also is a production of Civic Media statewide, and we're taking those phone calls from you at 844-967-2789. That phone number once again, 844-967-2789. Always appreciative and value highly your comments, your questions, your concerns about the subjects that we talk about on a weekly basis. Again, here on Morning Cannolis, our discussion of those great issues having to do with the rule of law and other matters related to that fundamental aspiration for justice. We are coming to you from the studios of WAUK Radio this morning in Waukesha, but this is a broadcast statewide of Civic Media and outlets throughout our state. I'm delighted to have you with us this morning. As always, that syllabus this morning going to include some of the major stories that you know well from just this past weekend. Yes, cannot avoid talking about what is perhaps among, if not the biggest story from this past week, and that is, of course, the previously unprecedented in the history of America, the criminal charges brought against a former president. His name, of course, is Donald John Trump. We're going to talk more about what exactly those charges are, what those mean, what the future holds. Beyond that, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court once again, some major news both on the bench and off the bench involving Clarence Thomas, as you well know. And then also, we're going to talk about privacy rights once again. Something else happened just last night in connection with privacy rights, reproductive rights, and yes, indeed, abortion coming out of our federal courts, one in Texas, one in Washington, the state of Washington, chatting all about that as well. Topical things, important things to understand and know in all of that. In all of that, we ask, as always, three questions. What happened? What are the facts? What do we know with certainty and with some clarity, acknowledging that we do not always know all the facts and have to wait for things to play out? Much of that, a focus of the discussion we're going to have about the charges now pending against the former president. Second, we ask, why is it important? Who cares? Why is this relevant and material to our understanding today of what America is all about? Why is it important to know about it? And finally, under many circumstances, What do we do about it? What are the action items? What are the responses that we should be pursuing in the future to ensure that not only do we understand accurately what's going on, we understand the importance of these stories, but also we can be a part of shaping the future of our state, of our nation, and even of our world. So those three questions, what happened, why is it important, and what do we do, always animating our presentation, our discussion, our analysis, once again involving you in the major stories of the week and even beyond that, involving the rule of law and the justice applications and invocations here in our United States of America. Last week, we introduced a new segment called Undiscovered Justice, and we're going to be returning to that again next week. That is a review and analysis of a story, a major story that teaches us something about the rule of law. Last week, we talked at great length about what was and still is going on in the state of Israel in response to the proposal now suspended by the prime minister there to modify dramatically, and that's probably understating it dramatically, the nature, the role, the position, the authority, the power of the judiciary in the state of Israel, the people of Israel mounting up and saying we're not going to tolerate that, taking to the streets, shutting down the country almost completely, and prompting the government to back off, prompting the prime minister to say, I'll put this on hold, we'll consider this proposal down the road. A real exercise, a real illustration of what the people can do when indeed they identify something in the area of the rule of law that needs to be remedied. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that next week, and also introducing you to another story. Another story, that's the teaser this morning, Undiscovered Justice running under the news headlines, but also telling us something about the world in which we live and answering that all-important question, what do we do about it? How do we take some action to ensure that our nation, our state, our world is a place of justice and equity and all those other things that we aspire to when it comes to understanding the rule of law for all of us. So we're going to get back to that next week. But this morning, we're going back to our usual topic, which is what happened today in history. What happened today in history, April 8th in history. A number of things going back a number of centuries, but they have their reverberations to this day. To this day, in 1605, the city of Oulu, Finland, was founded by Charles IX. And at that time, of course, the municipality coming into place, people living there, obviously, for a long time before that. But the notion of incorporating, codifying, if you will, people coming together in this major city in Finland, the transfer of the Finnish capital to Helsinki, ultimately, in 1812, also on this day. Why is that significant? Well, we know that Finland was once again in the news just this past week, again, somewhat overshadowed by the news of the indictment of our former president. Finland entering NATO this past week after having its application reviewed by the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, a significant move, not only with respect to the world, but of course the balance of power, if you will, and great number of implications for what's going on in Ukraine and our relationship, not only with our fellow NATO allies, but also with, of course, Russia and the conflict that right now continues to blaze horrifically in Ukraine. 1605, the city of Oulu, Finland, was founded. The transfer of the Finnish capital to Helsinki in 1812. A number of years later, the Venus de Milo was discovered on the Aegean island of Milos, thus giving the name to this famous statue. Again, what is the reverberation to this day? Well, it is that Michelangelo's David in Rome, of course, much in the news as we have school districts and places around the country looking at that and refusing to permit school children to understand the art that is. Again, art, an important part of our development, our growth. Venus de Milo discovered in 1820 on this day. 1913, in our nation, the 17th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was finally enacted. The 17th Amendment, what does it say? Not necessarily an intuitive kind of thing off the top of your head. It is that amendment in the Constitution that requires the direct election of senators. It became law on this day, April 8th of 1913. For about 110 years, that has been the law, and so we understand that to be the process, that when we go to the voting booths on a regular basis, we elect senators directly. It wasn't always the case. And when our founding fathers put the Constitution together, what they said was and is that senators would be elected by what body? By state legislatures. And again, because of the decision by our federal legislature, endorsed by a majority of the states, change that to ensure that you have now a direct franchise, a direct voice in selecting your United States senators, as we do right here in Wisconsin on a regular basis. 1952, another major story in history. President Harry Truman at that time called for the seizure of all domestic mills, steel mills, in an attempt to prevent the 1952 steel strike. And again, another major story, not only in litigation, not only with respect to labor, but also about the power of the executive to do those kinds of things, which we have chatted about at great length here on this broadcast. 1975, a landmark date in the history of race in America. Frank Robinson manages the Cleveland Indians in his first game as a Major League Baseball manager, the first African-American manager in our history, this day in 1975, breaking that race barrier for the first time in Major League Baseball. And finally, 2020, not too long ago, just a few short years, Bernie Sanders ended his presidential campaign on this day in 2020, effectively ensuring that a fellow named Joseph R. Biden would get the Democratic nomination for the presidency, and therefore going on to win the presidency, of course, as we know after that, notwithstanding January 6th and the other things that have happened since that time. So all those things happening on this day, April 8th, in the history of our nation and our world. Let's turn then in this first segment of our show this morning to this major story that broke on actually last week. We got news from the district attorney, a fellow named Marvin Bragg, in the area of Manhattan. He's the DA for that district in New York, announcing getting permission from the presiding judge in the court there to announce to the world that a grand jury, a state grand jury, not a federal grand jury, a state grand jury had indeed returned an indictment, a charging document against Donald Trump. The first time again in history that that has ever happened in our nation. He got permission from the judge to do that. The judge said, yes, I will permit you to announce that to the world. Why is it then that we did not hear immediately about the indictment itself? Why was that not released to the public and to the media and to all of us? The answer is that under New York law, the process is that those charges are only formally released when the defendant is brought into the proceedings, into the courtroom for the first time, something called an arraignment. You all know that well from television and even from reading news accounts of other criminal defendants. That is the initiating public event that brings the investigative portion of it in major ways to an end. Obviously, up to now, as I indicated, a grand jury looking at whether or not there is a basis. Probable cause is the standard for the state, and yes, indeed, a federal grand jury to return charges against any defendant. A grand jury in Manhattan, in that particular part of New York State, finding that there was indeed a basis to return an indictment against Donald John Trump, a singular defendant, and president then brought into New York City and into Manhattan last week, as we know, for the first time facing charges. We're going to talk about what those charges are, what happened at that proceeding in front of the judge, and telling you all about what's going to be and happening in the future in connection with that all-important charge against our former president and what it means, again, for all of us here in America. Stay with us for that discussion and more.
Heart failure, carpal tunnel syndrome, shortness of breath, stomach issues, lower back pain. How does it all add up? If you have heart failure and any of those seemingly unrelated symptoms sound familiar, it's time to talk with your cardiologist and get the full picture. They may add up to transthyretin amyloid cardiomyopathy. ATTRCM is a rare and underdiagnosed disease. Recognize the signs and discuss them with your doctor soon. Learn more at connectwithyourheart.com. That's connectwithyourheart.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Here's your updated forecast. Cloudy skies this afternoon with a slight chance for scattered showers. Highs level off around 48. Easterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies. Tonight, lows dip down to about 31. High temperatures reach up to 62. Tomorrow, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Temperatures well above average Monday and Tuesday, with highs from the mid-60s to the low 70s. Chance for scattered rain showers Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 35.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
Hi, Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 39 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back. This is Morning Cannolis, our weekly discussion, our analysis, our review of the major stories in law, in government, and the all-important aspiration for justice in America. Thank you once again for joining me on this Saturday morning. I am joined here in the studio by my terrific producer, Anya, and together we're taking your phone calls, as always, at 844-967-2789. Committing, devoting most of this first hour of our Saturday morning broadcast to review and analysis, we're going to dive deep, if you will, into what happened this week with respect to the charges against our former president, Donald Trump, pending in Manhattan. Once again, a state court proceeding, not a federal proceeding, a state court proceeding alleging crimes, felonies against our former president. We're going to get to that in just a moment or so. Right before the break, talking a little bit about the process of doing this. We all saw the president again arriving at that Manhattan courtroom last Tuesday, which also happened to be Election Day here in Wisconsin and in other places around the country. The president arriving for his arraignment, which again is a fancy way of saying an initial appearance. This is the thing that gets the process starting publicly. Of course, the process has been going on for a long time, as I have mentioned and described in some detail. A grand jury, a group of 26 people reviewing privately outside of the public domain, not under the view of the media, not under the view of you and me. Receiving evidence, testimony in particular, probably documents in this case as well, reviewing those, issuing subpoenas so it can investigate what happened, all of that going on appropriately under the privacy gaze of only one person, and that is the judge who's presiding over the case, and of course the prosecutors themselves presenting that evidence to the grand jury. That grand jury ultimately makes a finding, as they did here, of what? Of probable cause, not guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, probable cause to find that in this case, the former president has committed felonies. And we'll talk about exactly what those felonies are in just a moment or so. Once that document is issued, the judge, again, permitted the DA, Alvin Bragg, to announce that to the public and then brought into the public domain the document itself. And that document, again, premised upon a story. And we know well that the document itself, this multi-page document, charges the former president in 34 separate counts. I'm going to describe exactly what those are in just a moment. And the center, the focus of this, a story that I'm going to describe for you because it's there in the indictment, but it's also in an accompanying statement of facts, which the Manhattan DA also released, put into the public domain, into the record of this case, contemporaneous with the indictment itself. It gives us a whole lot more insight into what the nature of this case is all about. The indictment in this instance is not what we call a talking indictment, where the story comes through in the charges themselves. That's what the statement of facts is all about. But what we know from the indictment and that statement that accompanied the release of the indictment at the time of the arraignment on Tuesday was that Donald Trump is allegedly, and again, we hasten to add that he is assumed innocent until proven guilty. That is a part of our due process system in our republic, in our nation. He's allegedly at the center of a criminal plan to disguise some financial reimbursements, some payments to his attorney, a fixer named Michael Cohen. You know him well. He has been much in the media, written a book, served some time in federal prison for this same event, providing to Mr. Cohen some purportedly legal fees, but in fact, hush monies, paying him back for hush monies that Michael Cohen paid to other people. And so money laundering might be one way of looking at it. Transfer of documents, but once again, phony invoices, reimbursements, and ledger entries, all of which form the basis for these charges in the indictment. What is the story that comes out from the indictment? Well, we know, again, much of this from previous news reports. One of them has to do principally with a woman named Stormy Daniels. It's clear that during the final weeks of the 2016 campaign, again, we're going back two campaigns ago, she, Stormy Daniels, tried to sell her story of a decade-old affair, an affair with Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump, again, in fairness, he denies that this has ever happened. And Stormy Daniels' representative at the time approached the National Enquirer. Yes, that's the publication that you see when you're checking out at the grocery store. Its publisher, a fellow named David Pecker, also in our news in the past, once again resurfacing because of his involvement in these charges. David Pecker was a longtime ally, a friend, a confidant, if you will, of Donald Trump. And Pecker agreed on behalf of Trump to look out for any potentially damaging stories about Donald Trump. Why? Because of his association, his friendship, his affiliation with plainly the what could possibly be and did turn out to be the president of the United States of America. And so Daniels approaches David Pecker, National Enquirer. David Pecker turns around and helps to arrange a deal in which Trump's lawyer at the time, once again, Michael Cohen, this fixer, paid Daniels $130,000 to stay quiet about that affair. In other words, there's the hush money, sometimes called catching the story, National Enquirer, David Pecker, and killing it, ensuring that it does not see the light of day. She gets paid $130,000. Later, when he was president, a scheme that began before he was president, but in 2017 and as he went through his presidency, Trump then reimburses Cohen. And the allegations in the indictment are that that's when the fraud began. Trump's company classified the repayments to Michael Cohen, again, payments he made, Michael Cohen paid to Daniels to keep her quiet. The reimbursements were classified by Trump's company as legal expenses, and they cited a retainer agreement that, again, did not actually exist. And prosecutors say that there were no such expenses. The retainer was non-existent, again, forming the basis for a significant portion of this story. When we come back, more of the story and more an examination of exactly how that story gets produced and gets incorporated into the indictment itself. Stay with us for that discussion and your calls and your observations about what's happening in this particular criminal prosecution.
Keeping the Fox Valley connected, informed, and entertained. This is Civic Media.
ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis. Legal jeopardy for the commonly used abortion drug mifepristone, a Texas judge ruling against its use despite 23 years of FDA approval.
The judge said that the FDA had escaped any legal liability on this and were too bold in its decision when it approved this drug 23 years ago. Now, of course, the FDA made their argument in court that this is a drug that's extremely safe. It's been on the market for 23 years. They haven't seen any safety signals. They say there's no reason to challenge it now. Of course, the judge, who does have a history of opposing abortion rights, sided with the conservative plaintiffs.
ABC's Ann Flaherty, a competing opinion in Washington State, held that the drug should stay accessible. An appeals court will now have to weigh in. Pope Francis said to deliver his Easter vigil mass tonight at St. Peter's Basilica, followed by his Easter message in St. Peter's Square on Sunday. Day three of the Masters at Augusta National underway this morning in the rain after round two was suspended due to severe thunderstorms and high winds on Friday. This is ABC News.
Great to listen to while having Alinis and grilling some Sheboygan brats. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media, and don't forget the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Both Wisconsin Democrats and Republicans want to change the way income taxes are collected, but that's where the similarity ends. A report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum says Governor Evers' plan would direct nearly all relief to middle and low-income taxpayers. Republican Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu's plan creates a 3.5% flat tax, drastically lowering rates for higher earners but keeping it the same for lower earners. Beware of scammers claiming to be from the IRS. The Federal Trade Commission says that since 2018, more than 75,000 people have lost almost $30 million to scammers posing as IRS agents by phone, email, and text. The Federal Trade Commission says the first thing you would get is a letter, not a phone call. Only after several letters warning of unpaid taxes would you get a call or a visit. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
This is so good.
Why are you eating so much popcorn?
Well, I'm making a difference for Wisconsin schools, and I was able to easily shop online.
I mean, it does look yummy.
OMG, you've got to try this cheddar jalapeno.
Mmm, it is good.
Oh, and I ordered a bunch of other gourmet flavors, chocolate delight, cookies and cream, and even dill pickle, delivered to my door. And I help Wisconsin schools in the process. Go to the Wisconsin Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop. That's civicmedia.us/shop. And order now. The shop closes April 10th.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Back on Morning Cannolis, we're chatting in this first hour about this major news story of just this past week, that is the announcement of the specific charges against our former President Donald Trump. He appearing in a Manhattan criminal court on Tuesday to plead not guilty to 34 different counts. We're talking about the story behind those counts, and in particular, the decision by Donald Trump and his actual payment to his fixer, his attorney, Michael Cohen, of amounts of money to recompensate, to ensure that Michael Cohen is made whole for the payments that Cohen made of $130,000 to Stormy Daniels to keep quiet this decades-old affair that she allegedly had with Donald Trump. Trump reimbursed reversed Cohen, as I was indicating before the break. Prosecutors say that that's, again, where the fraud began. Again, these events happening in the early months of the president's term. Classifying those documents, those repayments rather, as legal expenses and citing a retainer agreement that does in fact not exist. No such expenses, retainer not non-existent. And those felony counts in particular, those felony counts all relate to invoices that Cohen submitted. He prepared them falsely, submitted them to Donald Trump and the corporation saying, yes, I paid. You should pay me for these legal services that I have rendered. And then checks were written by Donald Trump and others to reimburse Cohen for purportedly those legal fees and services that were not, in fact, rendered. And the ledgers of the Trump Organization that recorded those reimbursements through the writing of checks, the making of those invoices, that all a part of this scheme as alleged in the indictment. And so, indeed, 11 counts of the 34 were based upon those phony invoices, 11 more counts based on checks written to reimburse Cohen, and 12 of the counts based upon those ledger entries. Once again, the false ledger entries in the accounting records of the Trump Organization. That's where we get to the 34 counts altogether. The story, however, as set forth in the indictment and in the supplemental statement of facts submitted also by the attorney, the prosecuting attorney, whose name again is Alvin Bragg, the district attorney from Manhattan, identifies not just that particular scheme, but two others. The indictment also talks about the account of another woman. Her name is Karen McDougal, also much in the news in the past. She also says that she had an affair with Donald Trump. He also denies that one. McDougal, who was a former Playboy Playmate of the Year, had similarly, just like Daniels, tried to sell her story during the campaign, and she reached a $150,000 agreement with the National Enquirer. Again, David Peck's involvement. And once again, the hush money, the catch and kill process here. Rather than publish her account, that tabloid, David Pecker, the National Enquirer, suppressed it, hushed it up, caught it, and killed it in cooperation with Trump and Cohen. That, again, according to the allegations of the criminal prosecutor, the DA in Manhattan. And finally, there's yet a third component of this kind of fraud also alleged in these pleadings, these filings of this past week. Prosecutors also described a payment to a former Trump Tower doorman, the doorman who stands outside the door, presumably greeting and welcoming guests and saying goodbye to them as they leave. This particular doorman had claimed that Trump had fathered a child out of wedlock. Again, this was somewhat in the news in the past. The National Enquirer paid $30,000 for the rights to his story, just like the others, a little bit less money in this particular instance, although it eventually concluded that the claim itself was probably false. Nonetheless, paid those monies to keep him quiet. Those are the stories that are the predicates. That's the narrative upon which these 34 counts in the indictment are premised. Again, beyond the descriptive indictment itself, this statement of facts provides an awful lot of insight into these particular stories, the catch and kill involving Stormy Daniels, the hush money involving Karen McDougal, and this non-disclosure event involving this Trump Tower doorman as well. All of that, a part of the process. What happened on Tuesday? What happened on Tuesday is that during the course of the proceedings in front of the presiding judge, the prosecution, the government sets forth these accounts, reads out loud the charges, advises the defendant, due process at work, advises the defendant, Donald John Trump, of the allegations against him. And as I indicated, he appropriately, predictably pleaded not guilty, setting in motion now what's going to happen next in the further prosecution of the trial. The judge finds that the defendant, Donald John Trump, is not in fact a flight risk, not in fact a threat to the community, and so releases him and permits him again to be on not in any custodial situation, but requires that he show up at all future proceedings. The next proceeding, a pretrial conference scheduled for December 4th of this year, many months from now. I want to talk more about what happens between now and then in the next few moments. But before we do that, we've got a caller on the line already this morning. Mark, we appreciate your calling in, talking perhaps about this story or others that are on your mind this morning. Go right ahead.
Yeah, what I find division is that the maintenance of the Republicans, that this is purely a political persecution of Donald Trump, right. And that the fact of the matter is that leaders have been called to account for their actions in the past. I mean, that one, that, and this might be a stretch, but Henry II was punished for the murder of Thomas Becket by his household knights when they sure. murdered him. That simply because the man was president of the United States, that they should withhold prosecution of, or even investigation of his crimes. That is, being in public office should not be an immunity for being investigated or prosecuted for your criminal activity. I mean, that we have a number of our politicians that engaged in political and engaged in criminal activity and should face prosecution at some point in time.
And absolutely, Mark, could not agree more. I'm going to unpack two things from your comments. One, of course, is this notion that this is not, as the former president has said, this is not a witch hunt. We'll talk about some of the things that the former president also said in just a moment or so. The process is clear here, and that's the reason why, once again, exposing and describing, if you will, the grand jury process, that people, this is not a government decision in the capital G sense of the word. These are people who are brought in to determine on their own, from their own common sense, yes, applying the law, understanding the facts presented to them. This is not a unilateral decision by Alvin Bragg. In fact, he doesn't have the authority to do this kind of thing. And so, again, the process is clear, not simply the product of some political animus, Mark, as you just indicated, very appropriately, just the opposite. And then the second major point, no one is above the law, right? We have talked about that at great length on this broadcast and in others of civic media, talking about this notion that just because you are in elective office, in an appointed position, we're going to talk about someone else later in this broadcast this morning, appointed, who is also seemingly running afoul of, if not the law, at least common standards of decency and propriety, that, of course, the Supreme Court justice, everyone should be held to standards of high, not only visibility, but and clarity, but also good conduct, proper conduct, conduct that should be beyond reproach. And if, in fact, you breach those fundamental standards, you're the kind of person then that should be the subject of a grand jury investigation, of the prosecution that we're seeing this past week, that kind of thing. No one is above the law. Very important point to make. It is the rule of law. And more than anything else, the lesson to take out of this from this past week is we see this very much on display in Manhattan and plainly around the country as well. So appreciate those comments tremendously. We know that there were comments also made by the prosecuting attorney, his name again, Alvin Bragg, the DA in Manhattan. He said that these payments, these hush money payments made to these three people, were intended to hide damaging information from the voting public. And that really gets back to the core of these allegations, the story behind this 34-count state indictment. This notion that by doing this, he deprived the voting public of information that it otherwise would have in determining whether or not this particular candidate, Donald Trump, should indeed be elected to the highest office in our land. Alvin Bragg went on to say that participants also took steps that mischaracterized for tax purposes the true nature of the payments made in furtherance of the scheme. And so he ties together some very important notions. He ties together this notion of falsifying business records with the tax laws and also with election laws as well. He says to get Michael Cohen, again, this Alvin Bragg, says to get Michael Cohen his money back, to reimburse him for these payments that Michael Cohen made to keep these people quiet through the National Enquirer, through David Pecker. They planned a false statement, a series of false statements, actually. In order to complete the scheme, Bragg went on to say, they planned to mischaracterize the repayments to Cohen as income, again, undermining not only the proper process of ensuring that business records in New York State are properly understood and disclosed, but also making this connection to felony violations of the election laws, the deprivation of the electorate, of information about what was going on here, and also the tax laws. And that may be a very important piece of this as this case goes on. Why is all of that important? Because the underlying charges, just the falsifying business records, those are misdemeanors in New York. And by bootstrapping, by tying those misdemeanors, those falsification of business records accounts to specific instances of election law violations and tax law violations, what the DA has done here is brought those misdemeanors into the area of felonies and exposing the defendant, Donald Trump, to 4 years imprisonment for each of those 34 counts in the indictment. Now, unlikely that if the defendant here, Donald Trump, is convicted and sentenced, he'll be sentenced to that very broad and large penalty. But each one of those counts carries with it a possible penalty of 4 years in prison by virtue of the fact that each one of them is now a felony that is tying this falsification of business records, a violation under New York law, to other matters. Tax violations, campaign violations, election law violations. That's the sort of legal theory that is pursued by the DA in this case. Significantly, not surprisingly, the defendant himself, Donald Trump, also has things to say. In addition to pleading not guilty to all 34 counts in the indictment at that arraignment and plea hearing, he also says this. He says this fake case was brought only to interfere with the 2024 election, and it should be immediately dropped. He went on to do what he normally does, which is engage in name calling, which, like all of these statements that the defendant makes in the public domain, have got to be sending his lawyers into the stratosphere. Former president goes on to describe Alvin Bragg himself as a criminal. He describes the judge who's presiding over this case as Trump hating. He describes Fannie Willis, who is again pursuing an unrelated investigation in Fulton County, which is Atlanta, into whether or not the former president violated Georgia law in attempting to identify additional counts, counting of votes in Georgia, electoral votes there to sway and to get the electoral votes in Georgia, whether that is a crime under state of Georgia law. And he describes the special counsel, Jack Smith, who is pursuing again federally both the Mar-a-Lago matter and also January 6 investigations. He describes Jack Smith as a lunatic. Now, all of that, again, also in connection with things that the judge said during the course of this arraignment and plea hearing. Significantly, Juan Merchan is the judge who's presiding over all this. Significantly, the judge said to the defendant, Donald John Trump, that you are to refrain from statements that are likely to incite violence or civil unrest. That is the first lay down, if you will, of what the judge is commanding the defendant not to do. Don't go out there and do things that are going to incite violence or civil unrest. Plainly, Donald Trump will talk more about this prosecution in the public domain. The judge has authority in this case down the road. If indeed those statements are coming up to the line of civil unrest or inciting violence, even short of that, says things that could compromise the integrity of this prosecution and the defense, the judge can indeed call him back in and issue more directives restraining. He can issue gag orders with respect to things that the parties may say in the future. So all of that happening, again, between now and December 4th. We're going to talk right after this break about other things that are going on between now and the time of that next hearing right here on Morning Cannolis.
This is so good.
Why are you eating so much popcorn?
Well, I'm making a difference for Wisconsin schools, and I was able to easily shop online.
I mean, it does look yummy.
OMG, you've got to try this cheddar jalapeno.
Mmm, it is good.
Oh, and I ordered a bunch of other gourmet flavors, chocolate delight, cookies and cream, and even dill pickle, delivered to my door. And I help Wisconsin schools in the process. Go to the Wisconsin Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop. That's civicmedia.us/shop. And order now. The shop closes April 10th.
Weather brought to you
by Wisconsin Cheese and Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop.
Here's a fun treat for your Easter celebration, Cherry Elk Sausage and Port Wine Cheese Spread.
You can order them at civicmedia.us/shop.
Part of the proceeds benefit Wisconsin Athletic Programs.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
Over
on
if you are 45 and older, don't let but stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
Here's your updated forecast. Cloudy skies this afternoon with a slight chance for scattered showers. Highs level off around 48. Easterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies. Tonight, lows dip down to about 31. High temperatures reach up to 62. Tomorrow, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Temperatures well above average Monday and Tuesday, with highs from the mid-60s to the low 70s. Chance for scattered rain showers Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 35.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
KRadio.com.
And we are back here in Morning Cannolis. We're talking about this prosecution of the former defendant in Manhattan court by D.A. Alvin Bragg. And right before the break, talking about his appearance, that is Donald Trump's appearance, before Juan Merchan and the things that Juan Merchan said to him about what he can and cannot say going forward, refraining from statements that are likely to incite violence or civil unrest. That's what the judge directed the defendant to do, to refrain from making those statements. And beyond that, the judge also set this December 4th date as the next time in which the parties will appear in court. Lots of things going to happen between now and then. What happens between the time of an arraignment and the time of a next pretrial or status conference? Many things. The government has an obligation. The DA has an obligation in this case to disclose all the evidence that it has put together, presented in front of the grand jury, witness statements, testimony, documents, all the kinds of things that the government may use in the presentation of its trial at some point down the road. Again, a trial date not yet set by Judge Merchan in this matter. Got to produce all of that to the defense. That's a part of our due process, again, in America. And the defense then has an opportunity to file all kinds of motions. Government could file motions also if it wanted to. Presumably a motion to dismiss. Very likely that the defense team, is going to be filing a motion to challenge the very indictment itself. This notion that the misdemeanors for falsification of documents and of business records brought into the area of felonies based upon the execution of them to accomplish tax violations and of election violations, that will be challenged. The very integrity of the indictment itself. Probably motions to suppress statements made by people, maybe other evidence, documents gotten during the course of this proceeding, all kinds of procedural things as well. All of that can be presented to this judge. It is possible that this judge, even between now and the early December, will conduct some other hearings on any of those proceedings that may in fact come up, any of those motions filed, any of those kinds of petitions made by the parties to seek remedies of the court. Again, from the defense, likely motion to dismiss this outright. Motions to, in some ways, carve out portions of the evidence presented to them. And we'll, again, continue to monitor all of this, including, of course, any statements that the defendant himself may make along the way. Why is this case significant? Well, it's not just about sex. It's not just about non-disclosures. It really goes to the integrity of our election process. And that's what Alvin Bragg was talking about. It goes to the legitimacy of the campaign in 2016 and the very mechanism by which this particular candidate at the time became the president, by not disclosing, not permitting disclosure into the public domain, not permitting people to understand what he may or may not have done in the past what he is all about. That a violation, according to Alvin Bragg, and according to an awful lot of people in the federal system as well, a violation of the federal election laws as well. Significant, a lot of this took place in the early months of the presidency of Donald Trump, while he was also engaged in obstruction of justice when it comes to the Mueller investigation about Russia. Also significant, of course, is the fact that at the end of the term of the Trump presidency, also engaged in the January 6th insurrection, that, as I indicated, being reviewed in part by Fannie Willis out of Georgia, determining whether there were events that were violative of Georgia law. And of course, in a major way, by special counsel Jack Smith, who's looking at those issues very broadly. What did this president and others do while he was still in office, and perhaps even beyond, when it comes to January 6th and the attempt to overthrow the elective process, the counting of votes on that date? And then, of course, we do have Mar-a-Lago, which is the bookend after the president left office, his acquisition, his taking, his keeping, perhaps his use of classified and other non-classified documents to which he did not have any entitlement. All of that's still pending out there. All of these, hopefully, in the interest of justice, in the interest of the rule of law, resulting ultimately in investigations coming to a head. And of course, on this broadcast and others, we will continue to monitor any indictments, any charges that come out of those other matters, in addition to the many civil things that the former president is also facing. In our last moments of this segment, let's get back to some callers here. Appreciate that, value that greatly. Tom from West Dallas, been waiting on the line for a while. Tom, what's your thought or comment this morning?
Hi there. Real quick, I was reading through my Google News Runner, I keep reading, something about Stormy Daniels lost money or owes Trump now like $125,000. Do you have any idea what that's about? I didn't read the story.
Okay. I have not seen that story either. It's entirely possible that there may be all sorts of transactions of the past. I cannot comment on that. We'll take a look at it, Tom, and perhaps be able to get back to you. But I don't
know. News.
Right? It could well be. Presumably, obviously, she is going to be much in the news going forward here because she is a central figure in this allegation that she received hush funds monies from the president as a result of this scheme. We'll keep on top of that and other stories that may be out there. But thanks for the observation and the tip-off about that other story related to Stormy Daniels. Gene, you're also on the line this morning. Thanks for calling in from Eau Claire.
Thank you very much, and you may want to rephrase my question, but I will make it quick because this information is so valuable and outstanding. Influence and interference by the Republican-led Congress trying to bring in Bragg, get the information on the ongoing process. To me, aiding and abetting Trump and trying to send out misinformation. Could you comment on that?
Absolutely. And again, it's a story that is not just collateral to what's happening this past week, but also important to understanding. So what happens here is that in an exercise that is not reflective of civics in America, not reflective of how things work more broadly, what happens is we've got leadership of the United States Congress, again, where the Republicans are in charge, making requests of the DA in Manhattan for all the information that they have about this prosecution, this investigation. And again, just to say this out loud, you've got federally elected legislators asking a state prosecutor in another sovereign entity, namely the state of New York, the Manhattan DA's office, to disclose to them all of the information that the prosecutor has in connection with this investigation. There are probably, Gene, about 15 things that are wrong with that. And I suspect strongly, including when a congressman from our own state making the request, along with Jim Jordan, at least one other, making this request, knowing full well that that is not a good predicate for making the request. Why? A number of problems with it, including the fact that, of course, it undermines the defense right to not have these things yet in the public domain. There's no entitlement by the United States Congress to any of these materials, and that's exactly what Alvin Bragg wrote back in a very compelling letter. I commend your review of that letter to understand more about what Alvin Bragg said, which is, I'm not going to provide this information to you. You have no entitlement to it under the law, under the Constitution, under the sovereign state of New York and its principles and the guiding standards that guide a prosecution in this state. So great question, great observation. Nothing happening there. Alvin Bragg not about to give up that information. When we come back in our second hour, more stories of importance in the rule of law, justice, and government. Stay with us for that important discussion.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.